Part 2.
The Letters of Miss Jerusha Abbott to Mr. Daddy Longlegs Smith. 215 Ferguson Hall, 24th September. Dear kind trustee who sends orphans to college, here I am. I traveled yesterday for 4 hours in a train. It's a funny sensation, isn't it? I never rode in one before. College is the biggest, most bewildering place. I get lost whenever I leave my room. I will write you a description later when I'm feeling less muddled. Also, I will tell you about my lessons. Classes don't begin until Monday morning, and this is Saturday night. But I wanted to write a letter first, just to get acquainted. It seems queer to be writing letters to somebody you don't know. It seems queer for me to be writing letters at all. I've never written more than 3 or 4 in my life, so please overlook it if these are not a model kind. Before leaving yesterday morning, Mrs. Lippett and I had a very serious talk. She told me how to behave all the rest of my life, and especially how to behave towards the kind gentleman who is doing so much for me. I must take care to be very respectful. But how can one be very respectful to a person who wishes to be called John Smith? Why couldn't you have picked a name with a little personality? I might as well write letters to Dear Hitching Post or Dear Clothes Prop. I've been thinking about you a great deal this summer. Having somebody take an interest in me after all these years makes me feel as though I have found a sort of family. It seems as though I belonged to somebody now, and it's a very comfortable sensation. I must say, however, that when I think about you, my imagination has very little to work upon. There are just 3 things that I know. 1, you are tall. 2, you are rich. 3, you hate girls. I suppose I might call you Dear Mr. Girl Hater, only that's rather insulting to me. Or Dear Mr. Rich Man, but that's insulting to you, as though money were the only important thing about you. Besides, being rich is such a very external quality. Maybe you won't stay rich all your life. Lots of very clever men get smashed up in Wall Street. But at least you will stay tall all your life. So I've decided to call you Daddy Longlegs. I hope you won't mind. It's just a private pet name. We won't tell Mrs. Lippett. The 10 o'clock bell is going to ring in 2 minutes. Our day is divided into sections by bells. We eat and sleep and study by bells. It's very enlivening. I feel like a fire horse all the time. There it goes. Lights out. Good night. Observe with what precision I obey rules, due to my training in the John Grier home. Yours very respectfully, Jerusha Abbott. To Mr. Daddy Longlegs Smith. 1st October. Dear Daddy Longlegs, I love college, and I love you for sending me. I'm very, very happy, and so excited every moment of the time that I can scarcely sleep. You can't imagine how different it is from the John Grier home. I never dreamed there was such a place in the world. I'm feeling sorry for everybody who isn't a girl and who can't come here. I am sure the college you attended when you were a boy couldn't have been so nice. My room is up in a tower that used to be the contagious ward before they built the new infirmary. There are 3 other girls on the same floor of the tower, a senior who wears spectacles and is always asking us please to be a little more quiet, and 2 freshmen named Sally McBride and Julia Rutledge Pendleton. Sally has red hair and a turned-up nose and is quite friendly. Julia comes from one of the first families in New York and hasn't noticed me yet. They room together, and the senior and I have singles. Usually freshmen can't get singles. They are very scarce. But I got one without even asking. I suppose the registrar didn't think it would be right to ask a properly brought-up girl to room with a foundling. You see, there are advantages. My room is on the northwest corner with 2 windows and a view. After you've lived in a ward for 18 years with 20 roommates, it is restful to be alone. This is the first chance I've ever had to get acquainted with Jerusha Abbott. I think I'm going to like her. Do you think you are? Tuesday. They are organizing the freshman basketball team, and there's just a chance that I shall get in it. I am little, of course, but terribly quick and wiry and tough. While the others are hopping about in the air, I can dodge under their feet and grab the ball. It's loads of fun practicing. Out in the athletic field in the afternoon, with the trees all red and yellow, and the air full of the smell of burning leaves, and everybody laughing and shouting. These are the happiest girls I ever saw, and I am the happiest of all. I meant to write a long letter and tell you all the things I'm learning. Mrs. Lippett said you wanted to know. But seventh hour has just rung, and in 10 minutes I'm due at the athletic field in gymnasium clothes. Don't you hope I'll get in the team? Yours always, Jerusha Abbott. P.S. 9 o'clock. Sally McBride just poked her head in at my door. This is what she said. I'm so homesick that I simply can't stand it. Do you feel that way? I smiled a little and said no, I thought I could pull through. At least homesickness is one disease that I've escaped. I never heard of anybody being asylum sick, did you? 10th October. Dear Daddy Longlegs, did you ever hear of Michelangelo? He was a famous artist who lived in Italy in the Middle Ages. Everybody in English literature seemed to know about him, and the whole class laughed because I thought he was an archangel. He sounds like an archangel, doesn't he? The trouble with college is that you are expected to know such a lot of things you've never learned. It's very embarrassing at times. But now, when the girls talk about things that I have never heard of, I just keep still and look them up in the encyclopedia. I made an awful mistake the first day. Somebody mentioned Maurice Maeterlinck, and I asked if she was a freshman. That joke has gone all over college. But anyway, I'm just as bright in class as any of the others, and brighter than some of them. Do you care to know how I've furnished my room? It's a symphony in brown and yellow. The wall was tinted buff, and I've bought yellow denim curtains and cushions and a mahogany desk, second hand for $3, and a rattan chair and a brown rug with an ink spot in the middle. I stand the chair over the spot. The windows are high up. You can't look out from an ordinary seat, but I unscrewed the looking glass from the back of the bureau, upholstered the top, and moved it up against the window. It's just the right height for a window seat. You pull out the drawers like steps and walk up. Very comfortable. Sally McBride helped me choose the things at the senior auction. She has lived in a house all her life and knows about furnishing. You can't imagine what fun it is to shop and pay with a real $5 bill and get some change when you've never had more than a few cents in your life. I assure you, Daddy dear, I do appreciate that allowance. Sally is the most entertaining person in the world, and Julia Rutledge Pendleton the least so. It's queer what a mixture the registrar can make in the matter of roommates. Sally thinks everything is funny, even flunking, and Julia is bored at everything. She never makes the slightest effort to be amiable. She believes that if you are a Pendleton, that fact alone admits you to heaven without any further examination. Julia and I were born to be enemies. And now I suppose you've been waiting very impatiently to hear what I am learning. 1. Latin. Second Punic War. Hannibal and his forces pitched camp at Lake Trasimenus last night. They prepared an ambuscade for the Romans, and a battle took place at the fourth watch this morning. Romans in retreat. 2. French. 24 pages of the Three Musketeers and third conjunction irregular verbs. 3. Geometry. Finished cylinders, now doing cones. 4. English. Studying exposition. My style improves daily in clearness and brevity. 5. Physiology. Reached the digestive system, bile and the pancreas next time. Yours on the way to being educated, Jerusha Abbott. P.S. I hope you never touch alcohol, Daddy. It does dreadful things to your liver. Wednesday. Dear Daddy Longlegs, I've changed my name. I'm still Jerusha in the catalog, but I'm Judy everywhere else. It's really too bad, isn't it, to have to give yourself the only pet name you ever had? I didn't make up the Judy, though. That's what Freddie Perkins used to call me before he could talk plainly. I wish Mrs. Lippett would use a little more ingenuity about choosing baby names. She gets the last names out of the telephone book. You'll find Abbott on the first page. And she picks the Christian names up anywhere. She got Jerusha from a tombstone. I've always hated it, but I rather like Judy. It's such a silly name. It belongs to the kind of girl I'm not. A sweet little blue-eyed thing, petted and spoiled by all the family, who romps her way through life without any cares. Wouldn't it be nice to be like that? Whatever faults I may have, no one can ever accuse me of having been spoiled by my family. But it's great fun to pretend I've been. In the future, please always address me as Judy. Do you want to know something? I have 3 pairs of kid gloves. I've had kid mittens before from the Christmas tree, but never real kid gloves with 5 fingers. I take them out and try them on every little while. It's all I can do not to wear them to classes. Dinner bell. Goodbye. Friday. What do you think, Daddy? The English instructor said that my last paper shows an unusual amount of originality. She did, truly. Those were her words. It doesn't seem possible, does it, considering the 18 years of training that I've had? The aim of the John Grier Home, as you doubtless know and heartily approve of, is to turn the 97 orphans into 97 twins. The unusual artistic ability which I exhibit was developed at an early age through drawing chalk pictures of Mrs. Lippett on the woodshed door. I hope that I don't hurt your feelings when I criticize the home of my youth, but you have the upper hand, you know, for if I become too impertinent, you can always stop payment of your checks. That isn't a very polite thing to say, but you can't expect me to have any manners. A foundling asylum isn't a young lady's finishing school. You know, Daddy, it isn't the work that is going to be hard in college. It's the play. Half the time I don't know what the girls are talking about. Their jokes seem to relate to a past that everyone but me has shared. I'm a foreigner in the world, and I don't understand the language. It's a miserable feeling. I've had it all my life. At the high school, the girls would stand in groups and just look at me. I was queer and different, and everybody knew it. I could feel John Grier Home written on my face. And when a few charitable ones would make a point of coming up and saying something polite, I hated every one of them, the charitable ones most of all. Nobody here knows that I was brought up in an asylum. I told Sally McBride that my father and mother were dead, and that a kind old gentleman was sending me to college, which is entirely true, so far as it goes. I don't want you to think I'm a coward, but I do want to be like the other girls, and that dreadful home looming over my childhood is the one great big difference. If I can turn my back on that and shut out the remembrance, I think I might be just as desirable as any other girl. I don't believe there's any real underneath difference, do you? Anyway, Sally McBride likes me. Yours ever, Judy Abbott, nay Jerusha. Saturday morning. I've just been reading this letter over, and it sounds pretty uncheerful. But can't you guess that I have a special topic due Monday morning, and a review in geometry, and a very sneezy cold? Sunday. I forgot to post this yesterday, so I will add an indignant postscript. We had a bishop this morning, and what do you think he said? The most beneficent promise made us in the Bible is this: the poor ye have always with you. They were put here in order to keep us charitable. The poor, please observe, being a sort of useful domestic animal. If I hadn't grown into such a perfect lady, I should have gone up after service and told him what I thought. 25th October. Dear Daddy Longlegs, I'm in the basketball team, and you ought to see the bruise on my left shoulder. It's blue and mahogany with little streaks of orange. Julia Pendleton tried for the team, but she didn't get in. Hooray! You see what a mean disposition I have? College gets nicer and nicer. I like the girls and the teachers and the classes and the campus and the things to eat. We have ice cream twice a week, and we never have cornmeal mush. You only wanted to hear from me once a month, didn't you? And I've been peppering you with letters every few days. But I've been so excited about all these new adventures that I must talk to somebody. And you're the only one I know. Please excuse my exuberance. I'll settle pretty soon. If my letters bore you, you can always toss them into the wastebasket. I promise not to write another till the middle of November. Yours most loquaciously, Judy Abbott. 15th November. Dear Daddy Longlegs, listen to what I've learned today. The area of the convex surface of the frustum of a regular pyramid is half the product of the sum of the perimeters of its bases by the altitude of either of its trapezoids. It doesn't sound true, but it is. I can prove it. You've never heard about my clothes, have you, Daddy? 6 dresses, all new and beautiful and bought for me, not handed down from somebody bigger. Perhaps you don't realize what a climax that makes in the career of an orphan. You gave them to me, and I am very, very, very much obliged. It's a fine thing to be educated, but nothing compared to the dizzying experience of owning 6 new dresses. Miss Pritchard, who is on the visiting committee, picked them out. Not Miss Lippett, thank goodness. I have an evening dress, pink mull over silk. I'm perfectly beautiful in that. And a blue church dress, and a dinner dress of red veiling with oriental trimming. Makes me look like a gypsy. And another of rose-colored challis, and a gray street suit, and an everyday dress for classes. That wouldn't be an awfully big wardrobe for Julia Rutledge Pendleton, perhaps, but for Jerusha Abbott, oh my! I suppose you're thinking now what a frivolous, shallow little beast she is, and what a waste of money to educate a girl. But, Daddy, if you'd been dressed in checked ginghams all your life, you'd appreciate how I feel. And when I started in the high school, I entered upon another period even worse than the checked ginghams. The poor box. You can't know how I dreaded appearing in school in those miserable poor box dresses. I was perfectly sure to be put down in class next to the girl who first owned my dress, and she would whisper and giggle and point it out to the others. The bitterness of wearing your enemy's cast-off clothes eats into your soul. If I wore silk stockings for the rest of my life, I don't believe I could obliterate the scar. Latest War Bulletin. News from the scene of action. At the fourth watch on Thursday, the 13th of November, Hannibal routed the advance guard of the Romans and led the Carthaginian forces over the mountains into the plains of Casilinum. A cohort of light-armed Numidians engaged the infantry of Quintus Fabius Maximus. 2 battles and light skirmishing, Romans repulsed with heavy losses. I have the honor of being your special correspondent from the front, J. Abbott. P.S. I know I'm not to expect any letters in return, and I've been warned not to bother you with questions. But tell me, Daddy, just this once, are you awfully old, or just a little old? And are you perfectly bald, or just a little bald? It is very difficult thinking about you in the abstract like a theorem in geometry. Given a tall, rich man who hates girls, but is very generous to one quite impertinent girl, what does he look like? RSVP. 19th December. Dear Daddy Longlegs, you never answered my question, and it was very important. Are you bald? I have it planned exactly what you look like, very satisfactorily, until I reach the top of your head, and then I am stuck. I can't decide whether you have white hair or black hair, or sort of sprinkling gray hair, or maybe none at all. Here is your portrait. But the problem is, shall I add some hair? Would you like to know what color your eyes are? They're gray, and your eyebrows stick out like a porch roof, beetling, they're called in novels, and your mouth is a straight line with a tendency to turn down at the corners. Oh, you see, I know. You're a snappy old thing with a temper. Chapel Bell. 9:45 p.m. I have a new unbreakable rule. Never, never to study at night, no matter how many written reviews are coming in the morning. Instead, I read just plain books. I have to, you know, because there are 18 blank years behind me. You wouldn't believe, Daddy, what an abyss of ignorance my mind is. I am just realizing the depths myself. The things that most girls with a properly assorted family and a home and friends and a library know by absorption, I have never heard of. For example, I never read Mother Goose, or David Copperfield, or Ivanhoe, or Cinderella, or Bluebeard, or Robinson Crusoe, or Jane Eyre, or Alice in Wonderland, or a word of Rudyard Kipling. I didn't know that Henry VIII was married more than once, or that Shelley was a poet. I didn't know that people used to be monkeys and that the Garden of Eden was a beautiful myth. I didn't know that RLS stood for Robert Louis Stevenson, or that George Eliot was a lady. I had never seen a picture of the Mona Lisa, and it's true, but you won't believe it. I had never heard of Sherlock Holmes. Now I know all these things and a lot of others besides, but you can see how much I need to catch up. And, oh, but it's fun. I look forward all day to evening, and then I put an engaged on the door and get into my nice red bathrobe and furry slippers and pile all the cushions behind me on the couch and light the brass student lamp at my elbow and read and read and read. One book isn't enough. I have four going at once. Just now, there are Tennyson's Poems and Vanity Fair and Kipling's Plain Tales and Don't Laugh, Little Women. I find that I am the only girl in college who wasn't brought up on Little Women. I haven't told anybody, though. That would stamp me as queer. I just quietly went and bought it with $1.12 of my last month's allowance, and the next time somebody mentions pickled limes, I'll know what she is talking about. 10 o'clock bell. This is a very interrupted letter. Saturday. Sir, I have the honor to report fresh explorations in the field of geometry. On Friday last, we abandoned our former works in parallelepipeds and proceeded to truncated prisms. We are finding the road rough and very uphill. Sunday. The Christmas holidays begin next week, and the trunks are up. The corridors are so filled up that you can hardly get through, and everybody is so bubbling over with excitement that studying is getting left out. I'm going to have a beautiful time in vacation. There's another freshman who lives in Texas staying behind, and we are planning to take long walks, and if there's any ice, learn to skate. Then there is still the whole library to be read, and 3 empty weeks to do it in. Goodbye, Daddy. I hope that you are feeling as happy as I am. Yours ever, Judy. P.S. Don't forget to answer my question. If you don't want the trouble of writing, have your secretary telegraph. He can just say, Mr. Smith is quite bald, or Mr. Smith is not bald, or Mr. Smith has white hair. And you can deduct the 25 cents out of my allowance. Goodbye till January, and a Merry Christmas. End of Part 2.